As my background is nursing, it's no big surprise that I've seen quite a few dead bodies. And depending on how you find them, depends on what you do. If they are perhaps dying of cancer, and you walk in and find them dead, you're not really surprised, and you generally just call the patient's general practitioner. And the medical paper trail will show a deterioration in the patient, and therefore a visit from the patient's doctor will usually be allowed to certify the death. However, an unexpected death, or if they haven't seen a doctor 14 days prior to the death, leads us in a different path. I remember visiting a new referral who'd been recently discharged from hospital, was unknown to us, and we didn't gain access. We eventually forced access to the gentleman's property to find him dead. I didn't touch the evidently dead body. I just called the GP to inform him. Then it was passed to the police to visit. The police then referred it to the local pathologist to ascertain the cause of death. Most deaths don't require a pathologist, but some do. So, what is the role of the pathologist? In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, we'll look at this important role within our society, the role of the pathologist. Hi, and welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. In retrospect, I never did find out the cause of death for that gentleman. In fairness, I had never met him until he was dead, and I was so busy that I didn't really have time to catch up with these sort of things. But if it had been anything out of the ordinary, I'm sure the GP would have told me the next time I saw him. So busy was I and my team that such stories almost blot from my memory until I write it now. The body would have been taken to the mortuary, and at this point, the pathologist takes over. And the pathologist takes part in an investigation of a crime, or suspected crime, only when there's a dead body, or some part of a body, requiring examination. When a body is found dead under suspicious circumstances, the pathologist, who's usually a specialist in forensic medicine, and if the body's found in suspicious circumstances, the police will usually call in their own police pathologist to examine the crime scene. The body is then removed to a mortuary where the pathologists carry out an autopsy. He is expected to supply some or all of the following information to the police. 1. The cause of death. 2. An opinion on whether death was likely to have been natural or accidental, suicide or homicide. 3. Details of any injuries to the body and how they may have been caused. 4. The approximate time of death. 5. Physical characteristics which may help identify the body. 6. Any further investigations he wishes to undertake to confirm or support his opinions. And let's go through them one by one. 1. Cause of death. The cause of death, however obvious it may appear from external appearances, is not usually given until the autopsy has been completed. In many cases, it cannot be given to any degree of accuracy before this examination is over. 2. An opinion whether death is due to A. natural causes, every pathologist practicing legal medicine is called to many cases of sudden natural death, where at first inspection, the appearances of the deceased and of the scene strongly suggest the possibility of foul play. This is especially common when old people living alone are found dead in places which are in a state of disorder, suggesting that they may have been ransacked. An autopsy frequently reveals a natural death, and subsequent inquiries often show that the deceased has lived in a state of perpetual untidiness. Perhaps even more suspicious at first are those cases where young and apparently healthy people are found dead from unsuspected disease. These persons have injuries caused by falling or sustained during convulsions immediately preceding death. B. Accident. Many violent or non-natural deaths occur under circumstances suggesting suicide or murder. In many cases, it is only able to give an opinion after a full inquiry, and although the final verdict rests with the coroner or the jury, the pathologist's evidence is a fundamental part of the investigation. The rare cases of accidental hanging are frequently labelled as suicide unless an experienced pathologist is consulted. Accidental deaths may occur as a result of innocent horseplay under circumstances suggesting murder, and it is only when the autopsy has revealed some natural disease or congenital abnormality of the deceased which explains why death occurred that suspicion is allayed. C. Suicide. In many methods of suicide, the injuries found upon the deceased or the arrangement of the scene where death occurred conform to a pattern which is classical for that form of self-destruction. If the pathologist is summoned to the scene of the suicide, he's often in a position to state with confidence that death was due to a deliberate act on the part of the deceased. To the layman, the injuries present may appear so violent that he can scarcely conceive that they were self-inflicted. This is especially true in the cases of a throat cut during suicide, where the deceased may have severed all the soft tissues of the front of the neck. In cases of death from self-inflicted gunshot wounds, the suicide shoots himself through certain well-defined areas of the body, known as the sites of election. And when these wounds are present on the head, a deviation of the entry wound of as little as 1 inch from the classical site of election would cause suspicion of foul play. Besides self-destruction by cutting instruments and firearms, the findings in suicide by hanging, strangulation by ligature, stabbing normally confirm to a regular pattern. D. Murder. Examination of the body and its environment in a case of suspected murder is certainly one of the most important and exacting tasks of the forensic pathologist. Every unnatural or violent death exhibiting unusual features must be treated as murder or homicide until it is shown to be otherwise, as unless every care is taken in the early stage of the examination, evidence vital to the final solution of the case may be destroyed. The distribution and details of injuries in the case of murder or homicide are usually far removed from those of suicide and accident. The part of the body injured may be the same in suicide or murder by the same method, for instance, in the case of incised wounds of the neck and firearm wounds of the head, but the expert can usually tell the difference at a glance. 3. The injuries present on the body and how these might have been inflicted. All injuries to the body are catalogued at the autopsy and minutely examined. Frequently important information concerning the weapon used is gained from a detailed examination of the more superficial injuries, and a pathologist is often able to make an early stage judgment that the injuries were caused by some specific weapons, such as a blunt or stabbing instrument, or by the hands, or by a ligature and strangulation. Only after the autopsy is complete can he give a more accurate details of the shape and size of the weapon. After completing the examination, the pathologist should be able to give a sound opinion whether the wounds would have been self-inflicted or not. Their position and distribution is of the uttermost importance. For instance, a stab wound between the shoulder blades normally suggests murder, but as does a number of wounds, each which could be rapidly fatal. The order in which the wounds are inflicted can also have important bearing upon the investigation, and an opinion of this matter requires the highest professional skill. 4. Approximate time of death. An accurate estimation of the time of death is of great importance to any investigation of a murder where the time of death is not known by other means. The more accurate this estimation, the greater the number of persons eliminated from the inquiry, and hence the fewer number of suspects. Any estimation of the time of death is based upon a study of the changes which normally take place in the body after death. Of these changes, the rate of cooling of the body is the most important, and in order to obtain the maximum value from this purely physical change, the body temperature is recorded as soon as possible after the body is first discovered, and at regular intervals thereafter. The time of onset and duration of rigor mortis, the natural stiffening of the body, is very variable, being influenced by many factors, and hence is unreliable when estimating the time of death. Hypostasis, or the post-mortem gravitation of blood into the dependent parts, is also a variable phenomenon. Once the body is cooled and putrefaction or decomposition has started, the estimation of the time of death becomes increasingly difficult and can only be given within wide limits. 5. Physical characteristics which may aid in identifying the deceased. The identification of the victim of a murder or a homicide is of paramount importance in the successful investigation of the crime. There are very few cases on record where someone has been convicted or even arrested upon a charge of murdering an unidentified person. On the other hand, there are several cases where the progress of the police inquiries has remained virtually static for several weeks, and then, within a few hours of the identity of the victim becoming established, an arrest has been made. The ways of identifying a freshly dead body are the same as those of a living person. Details of height, colour of hair and eyes, deformities, scars, and of course, comparison with photographs. When the body has started to decompose, the features and the general appearance become so altered at an early stage that visual recognition might become impossible. A routine post-mortem examination, even upon such a body, however, may reveal a chronic natural disease for which the deceased has been treated, while sometimes it's the examination of mere bony remains that the pathologist is able to supply certain information which can lead to identification. For instance, examination of the skeleton will provide in many cases accurate information concerning height and sex, and dental data if the deceased has ever been having dental treatment, and if the dentist has maintained accurate records are in particular importance in identification. These days, of course, we have DNA. 6. Further investigations. After completion of the autopsy, the pathologist may consider it desirable that certain further examinations should be made to provide confirmation of his pre-existing conclusions or to supply information concerning the cause of death. These further examinations frequently require the assistance or cooperation of experts in other fields of forensic science. In examinations, sometimes are divided into the following groups. A. Microscopical. It is frequently necessary to examine certain tissues microscopically in order to establish the age of the injuries and especially whether they were sustained before or after death. For example, the microscopical examination of the lungs of newly born children in alleged infanticide is often essential to ascertain whether the child had a separate existence or not. In the case of sexual assaults, vaginal or anal smears are examined microscopically for the presence of sperm and their DNA tested. B. Toxicological. In many cases of poisoning, and certainly in all cases of suspected poisoning, it's necessary to examine certain tissues and organs and the contents of the stomach, bladder, and bowel for the presence of poison. If the poison is present, to ascertain the amount which has been taken. These examinations are carried out by the toxicologist in the forensic laboratory. Blood and urine are frequently examined for alcohol, and the discovery of high alcohol content in the blood or the urine may be of great importance in the reconstruction of the crime. C. Bacteriological. In some criminal cases, especially those involving a fatal septic abortion, it may be important to know which bacteria would have been responsible for the fatal infection. It's useful supporting evidence. This kind of case, of course, isn't as common anymore now with the advent of such things as the pill, but it's still relevant in certain countries, especially the Philippines where I am, where abortion is illegal. And finally, D. Serological. It's essential in all cases for all staining to be tested. We live in the world of DNA, but that massive subject is perhaps for a future day. And of course, the pathologist will sometimes be called to court to give evidence. Well, I hope you enjoyed that one. And if it whets your appetite for a bit of real-life forensic investigations, the BBC did some good documentaries following real police courses in cases. If you do a YouTube search on forensics, the real CSI, it really is worth watching and better than most of the Hollywood guff. Well, that's all for me, and not to make you guys jealous, but I'm heading off for an island, bit of sun, few pubs, and a beach, and this pasty white body will become Scottish bronzed, aka a lobster. Till next time, bye-bye.